will continue a few minutes after three so that both Captain O'Hara and Mr. Evans have an opportunity to testify, and they're the last two people who have signed up. Does anybody else in the audience want to testify today that wasn't actually signed up? Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ron Lawrenson. I'm with a local law firm, Simpson, Tellinghast, Sorensen, and Lawrenson. And I'm here on behalf of a shipping company known as Northern Transportation Company Limited. And I want to talk to you about something that's not in the bill right now. Northern Transportation, or NTCL as they refer to themselves, is a shipping company that's headquartered in Hay River, Northwest Territories. All of the work that they do is out of the Mackenzie River in the summertime when the ice is out. And all the work that they do is either in the Arctic or the Canadian subarctic. In the last few years, NTCL has begun making shipments, at this point at least, of petroleum products to a number of communities on the North Slope. Last summer, they were informed by the Board of Marine Pilots that they should be using a pilot, at least at the Point Hope location where they were delivering fuel. In years past, fuel has been delivered to the North Slope communities by U.S. Shipping companies operating U.S. registered tugs. There's a provision in the law that has been there for years that exempts U.S. registered tugs, and it's actually in the bill. It's not a provision that's proposed to be amended, but it shows up in the bill. It's on page 7, and it's paragraph 4, there, numbered 4 at the top. The law has for years exempted U.S. registered tugs from having to use a marine pilot in Alaska. So although U.S. registered vessels performing exactly the same services have never had to use a pilot, the Canadian company NTCL has been told that it hasn't used a pilot. It did, in fact, use a pilot last summer, as I said, at Point Hope, which is the one location on the North Slope at this point that is within a compulsory pilotage area. However, the board has proposed extending compulsory pilots to the entire North Slope. On behalf of NTCL, last summer I filed a lawsuit here in Superior Court against the board, challenging the constitutionality of this exemption because of the fact that it only applies to U.S. vessels and does not grant the same exemption to vessels engaged in foreign commerce. And under the U.S. Constitution, there is a prohibition against discrimination against foreign commerce. That litigation is moving ahead slowly because I'm at least hopeful that the problem can be resolved through legislative efforts rather than through litigation. I don't really see, and NTCL does not really view litigation as a very effective means of solving problems, and what we really have here is a problem. We do have a constitutional problem, but I think the legislature is fully in a position where it can cure this problem without my having to spend my client's money and the state spending its money arguing over the legality of the exemption. Anyway, so what I have wanted to come to talk to you about today, I've talked to the House Transportation Committee about this, is simply an amendment to that provision 4 in Section 1A of the law that would extend the same exemption to Canadian vessels that presently is enjoyed by U.S. vessels of the same class. In other words, tugboats of the same class performing exactly the same services in exactly the same locations would either have to have a pilot or would not have to have a pilot, but it wouldn't be one way for one for the vessels of one country and the other way for the vessels of the other country. By the way, in terms of cost, just to sort of give you an idea, for the one pilotage location, the one arrival and departure at Point Hope last summer, it cost NTCL $6,000. 4 days of that cost represented waiting time because of bad weather. Ultimately, the tug and its barges came in without the pilot. The pilot stayed on the beach. They offered to send in a boat to bring him out. The pilot said, no, I'll stay on shore and observe. When the tug departed, the pilot again elected to stay on shore and observe. The primary service that he provided was to let go of the lines the vessel departed. These folks for NTCL have been doing this work for years. It's what they do for a living. They only operate in the Arctic. They have substantially more experience than the average tug crew that you will see coming in from Puget Sound or from the Columbia River area. I am asking that the committee consider an amendment that would level that playing field so that the Canadian
Senator Lehman.
Ron, do we have a reciprocal agreement with Canada? So if our vessels were to do the same with them, that they would grant that, or would there be a condition where that might occur?
We do not. With respect to operations on the North Slope or on the Canadian Arctic Slope, there are no Canadian pilotage requirements, so there's no reciprocity necessary. It's different. There are pilotage requirements for operations in British Columbia, for instance. But under the Canadian pilotage regime, there are no pilotage requirements for operations in the Arctic.
What region is that in?
It's part of Region 3. The pilots come out of Dutch Harbor. And again, given the extreme distance, I mean, think about the distance along the coast and the difference in coastal conditions on the North Slope as opposed to the Aleutian Peninsula and the Aleutian Coast. The local conditions are enormously different. They're much less dangerous on the North Slope because it is all just open beach that's been ground down over the years by the ice. But typically the pilots out of Dutch Harbor don't have local knowledge of what's going on the coastline of the North Slope.
This is typically one trip a year?
We made deliveries to five different communities this last summer along the North Slope.
Well, probably one trip?
Three different vessels making those deliveries.
And this is a tug pulling a barge?
It's a tug pulling two or three barges in the train, yes.
Okay. Captain Mark, do the ships going in to the whatever we call the Red Dog?
Kivalina,
thank you. Do those ships have to have pilots?
Yes, they do.
Okay. So there, I mean, within the groups in Dutch Harbor, there is knowledge of working the
Arctic coast. We have a pilot there all summer.
Coast. Okay.
In that area.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you very much.
I do have a briefing paper that I put together that I'd like to be able to provide to the
Great. We'd like to have it. Thank you.
Can I just give it to your staff?
If you'll give it to Stephanie, she'll make sure everybody gets it.
I guess I do have one. Do you know what this has cost your client so far? There was $6,000 for that exercise. There's legal fees and other things. What do they have into this so far?
The legal fees that I've put into working on this particular issue probably exceed maybe as much as $15,000 at this point in helping them deal with the problem, criminal litigation, and get it going.
Thank you. Captain O'Hara? You've gotten more gray hair and glasses since we did this before.
Do not adjust the microphone. My name is Michael O'Hara. I'm a pilot in Region 2. I'm also a member of the Board of Marine Pilots, one of the pilot members. I'd like to address this act, Senate 130, just insofar as the safety aspects are. And that would be Section 8, page 3, the number 2 and number 6. I recommended some changes to Anthony and to Mr. Bush. They both agreed that the changes are acceptable. And if I could, I'll pass it to Stephanie. The reason that this is a safety concern is because in both these, as they're written, they degrade the standards for initial license, initial entry standards. The act as written now demands command experience. Number 6 essentially eliminates the command experience for initial entry into the training programs. So I would recommend that be a form of apprenticeship. Put into a training program through, I think it's 1-7, Stephanie? What's the number on that?
Has it?
1 175?
Yes, 175. And the second, and section 8, number 2, I would like to insert 2 years of master service on, as master on inspected vessels. And that's the only change in that section, because inspected vessels are more safety conscious, and that's the kind of master we're looking for.
That's line 15?
Line.
Am I correct?
15.
Just for clarification's sake, how does a vessel know whether it's supposed to be inspected or not?
The Coast Guard inspect inspect vessels.
And
some vessels are not inspected, for example, in the fishing industry.
How are they exempted? Is that a federal exemption?
Yes.
Just because they had the juice to get it through?
I guess they have a very strong lobby.
Interesting. Okay.
That's why there's so many problems.
Another reason. Okay, Captain O'Hare, thank you.
There's three strikes.
And I would like to say one more thing about the regional regionalization. Senator Halford had some questions about single port regions, and ideally, that's the best situation for a pilot to work in only one port. For example, Region 3 is very large now. The Canadian tugs have to pay for a pilot to go all the way from Dutch Harbor. We can make a Region 5 on the North Pole. There's an example of how the regional concept could provide piloted services for those tugs. We could have a state licensed pilot, state standards, not a Canadian standard, Alaska standards for Region 5, and with a local pilot. So there are ways to that this regional concept can be used to state advantage.
You've been on the board for a while. Has the exemption that Mr. Lawrenson is asking for vessels of U.S. registry of less than 300 gross tons and towboats of U.S. registry and vessels owned by the state, so on and so forth, has that exemption always been in the pilot eject since we've had a pilot eject?
As far as I know, that came in because of the ferries running between B.C. and Southeast, so that the Alaska ferry wouldn't need a pilot, and similarly, a Canadian ferry or tugboat wouldn't need a pilot coming to Alaska.
And as a result of that, when I see tugs zooming up and down in Southeast, they also do not have pilots aboard?
They may or they may not. If they're Canadian, most likely not, if they're in frequent trade. If they're a foreign registered tug, they will need a pilot. If they're American tugs, they won't.
Okay. Would you define command experience?
Command experience is the master of a ship. Essentially, the captain has the responsibility of the ship. It's more than a license. For example, a 1,600 gross ton license is a freebie. When an ocean second mate passes exam, he automatically can get a 1,600 ton master's license. In order to get a second mate ocean's license, it takes 1 year sea time. This sailor has no experience in command, but he's given a master's license and can enter this training, piloting profession based on 1 year experience. And that's why we try to have the highest standards. We try to accept only the applicants who have gone through the industry process of selection. The industry has chosen their best people to sail master. We take the best of those, and those are the people we want running tankers.
So someone, a person who, no matter how long they've been in the trade, if they'd only been a first mate, that doesn't count as command experience?
No. Chief mate is in command of a section of the ship. He is in command of the entire deck force. And it takes him longer to get into the pilot profession. It takes 2 years instead of 1 year of sea service as a chief mate. So he can do it because he does have command experience. It's not the level of master. But lower grade officers are just watchstanders, and they don't have the command.
So everybody in your organization currently has
command
experience,
absolutely.
On some beach.
On something.
Something. Okay. Is there any other question? Take a hit back since you took a fishing hit?
No, in three strikes he's out. That's only one strike for him.
Thank you, Captain O'Hara. Mr. Evans.
New pitcher here. Or new batter.
Adam Chair, my name is Bob Evans. I represent Alaska Marine Pilots. I have only one observation, and I guess a question that flows from that observation. With respect to the provision of the, not in the bill, in SB 130, but in the House bill right now, binding arbitration. The observation is, I've asked a number of people, Mr. Bush and a couple other attorneys and people involved in the system for some time. If this were to become a law, it probably would be the first time that the state has compelled or mandated that two private businesses enter into binding arbitration. We have that kind of thing in statute with the state of Alaska and state troopers, employer-employee relationships, but we've never entered the arena of the state government going and telling people they need to have binding arbitration agreements. That observation being made, the question arises after looking at Title IX, which deals with binding arbitration. Under Title IX, you either petition the court for an arbitrator or you go to an arbitrator as a result of collective bargaining agreement. That not being the case here, where the state is talking about mandating binding arbitration, who's going to pay for the binding arbitration? Is it fair to compel the parties who are mandated to go into binding arbitration, or should the state take on that responsibility? And that's the question for future discussion. Thank you very much.
Anything else you want us to think about? Okay, Senator Lehman, any questions? Thank you. Does anybody else wish to testify? Okay. Due to travel schedules of the Resources Committee, of myself, other members of the subcommittee, I am not sure when we're going to be coming back for another subcommittee meeting. However, we are going to be working with Mr. Tuig and Ms. Horetsky on some language tightening and looking at some of the amendments that have been brought forward today. What I would hope to do is have the opportunity to put together a CS for a draft CS for circulation for people to make comments on, so that when we come back to subcommittee level, we have a working document with some changes in it, rather than just talking about the same things all over again. Unfortunately, I suspect we will not be able to do a meeting next week. I believe it will be the week after, so probably the first week in April, which would mean that it will be at least the 6th, because that's, I'm sorry, at least the 5th, because that's the day that the Senate will reconvene after being gone for 5 days. So sometime that week, knowing that there's a bill moving on the House side, I don't think we have a time problem in terms of being able to take action this session, but we are all very sensitive to the fact that I think it's the collective wisdom of everyone that we do want the board to be extended. So there's not an interest in not having a bill, as far as I know. With that, I would like to thank everybody for being with us today. And I think I have to say that after listening to all the testimony, everyone I'm listening today, everybody seems a lot more reasonable this year. We've actually made a lot of progress. With that, we're adjourned.